Today's show, Ohio State, Michigan, Iron Bowl, Apple Cup. What the heck is going on in this playoff chase? Is A&M going to get a coach? We got so much jammed in. Thanks for listening. Continue to subscribe.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
He called a near-perfect football game. Just cool, calm, before, after, except when he called it Michigan University, not the University of Michigan. No problem. Pressure? I mean, this game has crushed men.
Russ Dellinger!
You start asking those questions not because he's in jeopardy of being fired, but because you know how probably frustrated he is.
And SI's Pat Forty!
Here's the thing. They're not soft, but they're not as tough as Michigan. And if that's the yardstick, then you keep coming up short. Then you're not doing your job as well as people expect you to do your job.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Right, welcome to the pod, and 13 sacred Saturdays later, regular season is over. We've overreacted to all of them, and we'll overreact today.
Oh, yes, we will.
Great deal to get through. So buckle in. Might be a little longer. It's the best time of the year. Absolutely epic day of Saturday, considering there were no real upsets.
Yeah. Yeah. Like all Almost the teams so that were close. In the playoff chase are still in the playoff chase.
Four undefeated teams.
So close.
Still.
Yeah.
Yeah. So close.
So many upsets.
I mean, we had obviously Ohio State, Michigan was a close game. We had the, what are they calling? The Milroe Miracle, the 4th and 31, whatever.
Yeah, fourth and 31, the grave digger. Right. What's the play called? The grave digger.
Alabama gets its own prayer in Jordan Hare. I mean, that epic play call by Kalen DeBoer in Washington to keep the 4th and 1 from his own 29 with 1:15 remaining in the game, and he goes for it on a pitch, an option pitch to Adunze, who runs it for 29 yards. Incredible play.
That's not onions. That's cantaloupes, man.
Oh, yeah. Just whatever. What? Yeah, why not? Oh, if it doesn't work, we lose. And we lose our
undefeated season goes away. Yeah.
I mean, just you name it. Everything happened. It was fantastic. So let's get to it. Let's start at the big house. Michigan 30. Ohio State 24. Tremendous football game. Classic in this rivalry. It was 119th meeting, I think. Pat and I were there. Sherrone Moore, who's the interim coach, because Harbaugh is suspended and is at his house, probably screaming. And who knows? Is he wearing a shirt? We don't know. What is he eating? We don't know. McDonald's run at half, maybe. Did he rake leaves because he got nervous in the third quarter, like a lot of Michigan fans watching at home? Maybe. Sherrone Moore, as I put it, was supposed to be the punishment. He was a penalty. He was a punitive measure. The Big Ten said, hey, we think we need to balance out the advantage you got in the first 7 games of the season of having Connor Stallions. So we will make you have Sherrone Moore be your coach for 3 games. That will equal it out. He's a 15-yard penalty. He called a near-perfect football game.
Yeah.
Just cool, calm, before, after, except when he called it Michigan University, not the University of Michigan. No problem. Pressure? I mean, this game has crushed men, including maybe the one across the way. No pressure. Yeah. Pat, obviously the game went down to the final minute. There was an interception at the end, but Michigan Ohio State's fighting uphill the whole game. You know, Michigan, Ohio State certainly could have won the game, and they have Marvin Harrison, but they did not. So, I don't know, your general thoughts on the game. Let's start with Michigan's side, and then we will get to the Ryan Day factor, which is probably the more interesting part because Michigan's moving on and Ohio State is probably not.
Yeah. Well, from a Michigan perspective, not just an outstanding win, but a narrative-changing win, I think, for this season. I don't think you look and say, well, See, Connor Stallions really gave them an unfair leg up, and that's why they were good. Because they haven't had that leg up for several games now, and this was the big game against a really good opponent, and they were the better team. As you said, Ohio State had a chance to kind of steal it late, but Michigan was the better team throughout the day. And did so with an interim coach, and did so without Will Johnson for a lot of the game, their star cornerback who had an interception to set up the first touchdown, and did so for the last quarter plus without Zach Zinter, their best offensive lineman and kind of the heartbeat of that unit after he had a broken leg. So it was a fantastic performance by Michigan, and it went a long way towards at least shutting up people saying this team got here because it cheated. There's going to be penalties coming for Michigan football, I am fairly sure, in 2024. And the whole thing, like the whole Harbaugh program, could splinter and collapse by the time this, you know, we are 6, 8, 10 months from now. But for now, which is really all Michigan fans care about, is this season. This season is legitimized in a big, big way, I think, by what they did Saturday and what they've done the last couple of weeks.
I got to watch about half the game or so, especially late in the press box. And it was the team I saw the last couple of weeks, the team I saw all year at Michigan. They just block and tackle so well, and they're so methodical and so disciplined. Some of their drives were pretty incredible. 14 plays, 75 yards, 6 minutes and 56 seconds. 7 plays, 75 yards, 3 minutes and 40 seconds. 13 play, 56 yards, 7 minutes and 5 seconds. Just ball hogs, move methodically down the field. And honestly, just play keep away. They have such a great recipe for winning, and they play within themselves and to their talents. And I said it, I think, after I saw them play Penn State live there in Happy Valley, it just feels like a Michigan-Georgia showdown coming between it. Outside of those two teams, I just don't see either getting beat. I mean, you never know, right, any given Saturday, but these two teams look better than anybody, and they're kind of similar in a way too, you know, and that would be certainly an exciting matchup in Houston.
I think you had a great line in one of your columns: they just block and tackle you to hell, and they really do. I think that was after Penn State, and they really do. To Pat's point, I do think they won 3 games in 1 yesterday. I think defeating Ohio State yesterday silences reasonable claims that the only reason they beat Ohio State the last 2 years is because they had sign stealing, or this advanced scouting was so sophisticated their sign stealing was better than Ohio State's. I mean, go back to 18 and 19 when Don Brown would signal in his defense and then Ohio State would immediately run a crossing pattern over and over. Is that a problem? Not my idea. But it's part of the game. I think you don't sit there. It had Ohio State beaten them by 10, 14 points, Ohio State fans and Ryan Day and everyone would be able to say, hey, look, Connor Stallions is gone. Those 2 years didn't happen. I don't think you get to make that claim. Some people are going to make that claim, obviously, but I don't think that's a fair claim. One of the reasons I've never gone too crazy on this story, and I think it's a violation and they should be punished and it's a thing, but not the biggest thing, is because I covered Deflategate in the NFL and they tried to tell me Tom Brady was only good because the footballs were deflated. And no, he was good because he's Tom freaking Brady. I don't think this stuff matters that much. And you go, they're 5-0 now since they've beaten Penn State and Ohio State. It looked like the same Ohio State, Michigan game as we've had. So I think for Michigan, this was such a significant win for, as Pat said, the narrative. Look, you can make a lot of money in media screaming that, you know, this is the biggest scandal and this is the end of the world and this is, you're going to cheat it, you're gonna ban them, all the different stuff. You can do that over and over on these things. We try not to be that way. But at the end of the day, I don't think that holds up. I just don't. Is it a punish? Should they be punished? Are they going to be punished? Absolutely. Is Harbaugh going to be suspended more? Absolutely. All of that. But to sit there and say, oh, no, the only reason they won the last 3 years because Connor Stallions, I think is ridiculous. And I think they proved, I thought that was ridiculous even if they lost. But it's pretty hard to hang on to that one unless you're really diehard Buckeye fan. Here's why I love watching. You have more on that, Pat, or no?
No.
Michigan, I'm going to give you the what I think was the defining moment of this game. Late second quarter, last drive of the half by Ohio State. And this is why Michigan is such a good football team. It's not because they have the talent that Ohio State has, because they don't. They have a lot of good players, but they don't have Marvin Harrisons and those guys. They aren't loaded with just top 10 picks every year. It just doesn't happen. They get a guy or two. They go deep to Marvin Harrison. McCord throws a deep ball to Marvin Harrison. He has Will Johnson beat. Will Johnson just tackles him. Intentional pass interference. They had clearly coached Will Johnson to say, you are going to get beat by Marvin Harrison. Because next year, Marvin Harrison can go in the NFL and Jalen Ramsey ain't going to be able to cover him either. No one can cover this guy. He just tackles him. Just says, I'm taking the PI. I'm not letting myself get beat. Now, Marvin Harrison being Marvin Harrison, he catches the damn ball anyway.
Yeah.
Okay? Because, I mean, he is so freaking good. 44-yard gain, but he's tackled. If Will Johnson hasn't been coached up and isn't smart enough to accept that coaching or figure this out on his own and react in that moment, it's 7 points for Ohio State. Instead, Will Johnson commits an intentional pass interference and tackles Marvin Harrison, and it's a 44-yard gain. And what happens on that drive? It stalls out. There's 40 seconds left. It's 4th and 2. At the, 35 yard line?
I think so, roughly.
Instead of into the end zone with Marvin Harrison and momentum change, and Ryan Day says, all right, I'm going to run the clock down and attempt a 52-yard field goal from a kicker who's never made one that deep. Mm-hmm. In the big game, on the road, it's 36 degrees out. He goes cautious, and they miss. Those are two different types of coaching. One is how fundamentally sound and smart Michigan is. And then there's the side part with Day not being aggressive. Not let's take a shot at 40 seconds. Let's run another Marvin Harrison over the middle play. Get the ball to Marv. I don't care how. Do the Odunze chip. Whatever you got to do. The guy is incredible. And try to get that first down. And at least if we stall out, because the clock is a kind of a defender and it's an analytic part. But at least if we stall it, we're closer. And if not, we don't get it. Instead, he plays cautious, plays conservative. Sharon Moore all day, 3 for 3 on fourth downs, aggressive, right? Donovan Edwards, he calls Donovan Edwards halfback option to Colston Loveland for 34. Sets up a huge field goal that gets from 24 to 27, right? They bring in a backup QB to run, you know, change tempo out of nowhere. They huddle him up and hide him and run it. They did stuff all day long to try to get every last yard. And I thought Ryan Day just played basic football and cautious football, and it cost him. So that moment, that sequence, not only was it not a touchdown, then it wasn't even a field goal, was maybe the difference or indicative of what the difference was in this football game.
Yeah. I mean, look, Sharon Moore was fantastic. You talk about being thrust into pressure. And I know Harbaugh was around all week and probably even Saturday morning and all that, and it was part of the game plan. But you still have to go out there and make the decisions on the sideline with all that pressure on you. And we saw the decisions Ryan Day made, and he did play conservatively. He 4th and 1, he punted early on. And then 4th and 2, he went for the field goal. Last year, the last possession against Georgia, he was a little bit cautious about not getting his field goal kicker closer and leaving him with a 50-something yard shot then, and that didn't work out. But Sharon Moore has answered every question anybody could have about what kind of head coach he would be at least on Saturdays, that's for sure, because, man, he did a great job. And I like the backup quarterback thing blew me away, and I'm sure that was, you know, a Harbaugh decision, but bring in Alex Orji and have him run the ball twice and once pick up 20 yards was a fantastic change of pace that just worked really well at a time when that was important. You know, the game was pretty much a jump ball at that point. That was third quarter, and you know, Ohio State had shown that they had the ability to move the ball, and so you've got to find ways to keep going, and they did. And so I thought Michigan had a great plan and executed it extremely well.
What I was curious, just both of you being there, because you know it's hard to tell sometimes on TV and stuff. But what was the atmosphere, crowd, like the juice in the stadium, given how the magnitude of the game and all the sign stealing stuff, you know, what was it like?
I would say, first of all, I've never heard louder roar for the coin toss. Like when Michigan won the coin toss, you would have thought they just scored a touchdown. So I think people were really amped.
Cheated on the coin flip.
What?
Stallion.
They did.
Like it.
No. They did boo when the referee said that the tails was the Big Ten logo. They did boo
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. Tony Petitti didn't show up either. How about a commissioner not showing up?
Shocker.
Oh, no.
Had to be the first time the Big Ten commissioner has not been at Ohio State, Michigan ever.
Tony Petitti can't miss the championship game this next week in Indy, though. He's going to have to be there for that one.
Send Bill Hancock out to hand him the
trophy. it's interesting, Ross. Like, to me, I mean, obviously, this was huge game buzz, huge anticipation, and a massive crowd. But it never feels as edgy at Michigan as it does at Ohio State. Ohio State sometimes feels edgy to the point of dangerous for this game. And there's just a little bit different atmosphere. And the one thing, you know, in the press box, you're sealed up. You really can't hear it. But walking around beforehand, and maybe it's too just that, like, the expanse of Michigan Stadium is so massive that you don't have, like, at Ohio Stadium, you got that one really cool end, right, Dan, with the mural or whatever there, where it's like thousands and thousands of people are clustered out there. You don't really have anything like that at Michigan.
Yeah, Ohio State. I mean, that's why I love Ohio Stadium. It's my favorite stadium. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. The whole, it's just like, what is this? Looks like like they fought wars in it and stuff. These weird towers. Yeah. No idea what's going on. I love the place. There's like these iron gates and stuff. It is more intense. Michigan's a little more country club of a school and crowd. Like, they got a big, nice, beautiful golf course, so they do a lot of their tailgating and stuff. You know, I wouldn't call it the wine and cheese of Stanford, but it's a little bit. It's a little bit, right? They're all lawyers. They all know, you know, don't what assault and battery will carry. So there's a little bit less. It was super intense, though. I will say this. I've been to many Michigan-Ohio State games at both places. This was the least amount, as I'm just recalling, I don't have data on this, but virtually no red in the stadium. There were the two sections that they give the families and, you know, the small section, the strip up at the top of the, you know, worst seats and the band they put all the way at the top, all that. But in terms of just pockmarked around, it was all blue. I've never seen that before. Now, some of that might have been most of the games I covered, Ohio State was walking in at like 14-point favorites. And, you know, hey, let's go to the guy and go on a game. We might lose, right? All of a sudden, everything's changed. But even at Ohio Stadium, you'll see more blue because the schools are only a few hours apart. I mean, Toledo, Ohio is 45 minutes from Ann Arbor. Obviously, these are huge alumni. They live in Detroit and across, like, they live in each other's area. So I was like, God, there's almost no Ohio State fans here. Yeah. And I thought that was interesting. I don't know whether that's the Michigan fans were so jacked they weren't going to sell, or Ohio State fans were like, hell no, I'm walking into that. I don't know, but I thought it was intense, and obviously it was a wild scene after. That might have been the Guinness record for most people ever on a field.
It was a lot of people.
I mean, there's 100. What was 111 plus there? I mean, it was a massive crowd.
I mean,
it looked like a controlled field rush.
Yeah, it was not out of control. It was not a kick six field rush. But and I will say, like, they when they had the gold pom-poms going early in the game, it was like watching 100,000 gold pom-poms all shaking in unison. It was like, oh my God, this is an actual army.
Yeah, it is. It is something else when they get going. Quick question on Sharon Moore before we get to Drende. Can he win? Should he be the runaway candidate for the, is it the Broyles Award that the assistant coach of the year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's 4-0 as a head coach and has two top 10 victories.
Yeah, probably so. Yeah. Does he even qualify?
I don't know.
How does that work? I don't even know.
He might have done too much head coaching to qualify.
Four victories, two top 10 victories. He's the offensive line and offensive coordinator. And in true Michigan fashion, he even got suspended himself one game this year because, I mean, it's Michigan. You got to get. Getting suspended for one game in Michigan's like in Goodfellas when, you know, when the guy gets, when the young, young guy gets pinched and then all the mobsters meet him after it comes out of court. Ah, you didn't rat on your friends. Ah, good job. You're in the family. So I don't know, but it seems like a shoo-in.
Yeah.
Two top 10 wins. He's definitely going to be the next Michigan coach. Unless he somehow gets rolled up in this or this thing gets way worse.
Right.
I mean, Michigan's got their, they'll either, he's their coach in waiting. He's their coach. I mean, this, they love him. He's very, very charismatic. And look, he was able to sustain the pressure of that moment. And it is an insane pressure. It is an insane pressure. So let's get to Ryan Day. What now, Pat?
Yeah. It's
he is 40-3 in Big Ten play. Is that it? And the three losses are all to Michigan.
He's 39 and three.
39. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and 38-0 against the rest of the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Like, okay. Yeah, he's got one win. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. His record is just unbelievable. Except for this
he's
game.
He's supposed to beat all those other teams.
Yeah, you are. And Urban Meyer made it, so you're supposed to beat Michigan too. Got the expectations raised. We don't lose to Michigan. Well, historically, you lose about as many as you win, and now you've lost three in a row. And this game had some similarities to the other two, but they were humiliated in 2021 and in 2022. They got absolutely steamrolled in the second half of both those games. This time, very good game. I thought both teams played well, and they lost by 6 points. But again, the second half, their defense can't stop them. Michigan has had 17 scoring drives and one punt in the second half of the last three games against. In the second half, so wow. They cannot stop them.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, 17 total drives, 12 scoring drives, one punt. They missed a field goal three times. They ran out the clock, but it has been you can't sit there and say you can say you're a tough team, but when you're not tough he did loudly, proudly, going
Lou
after 86-year-old Lou Holtz.
But I'd like to know what Lou Holtz is right now.
Here's the thing: they're not soft. But they're not as tough as Michigan. And if that's the yardstick, then you keep coming up short, then you're not doing your job as well as people expect you to do your job. And Ryan Day sounded like wrecked after the game, I thought. I mean, he said they were crushed. He said devastated. I watched the Ohio State players come out of the locker room and go to the buses. And, I mean, it was glum and grim. And Kyle McCord came out, and he still got tape on his right ankle. He's got his eye black still on. Like, he didn't bother showering or anything. He's just like, get me out of here. And he saw his family and he kind of sighed and went over and hugged his mom and looked like he was crying. I mean, his whole shoulders were heaving, and it's just, you know, you feel bad for him. I mean, this is a guy who's doing the best he can. He is not as good a quarterback as the previous guys were at that position. But McCord is 0 for Michigan. He's 0-3. Marvin Harrison, 0 for Michigan. JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer, 0 for Michigan. Travion Henderson, 0 for Michigan. Emeka Agbuka, 0 for Michigan. All these guys that were part of that number two ranked class in 2021 that was supposed to win a national title, that was supposed to continue the domination, it hasn't happened. It's gone the other way, and that's a tough one to swallow.
Well, back to Dan's question, I think it's an interesting one, too. Like, what does Ryan Day do? Does he just plug, you know, continue to plug away? Obviously, they're not going to fire him, but the heat is there. The pressure is there. It's ratcheted up. He's done, as we discussed, outside of those three games, done a remarkable job there. Would he dare, you know, leave a job like Ohio State for another college job? Or would he be attractive for NFL teams? Does that interest him at all? You start asking those questions not because he's in jeopardy of being fired, but because you know how probably frustrated he is at, despite all the winning, you know, not winning in this rivalry, in what that means for, like, you know, him and his family living in Columbus. I mean, you just kind of wonder, like, what the future is there. At some point, and it's only been, you know, what, 4 years, but at some point you think of those coaches who in the past could not beat their rival, right? And those coaches, they were not coaching at that school for much longer. I'm thinking of Les Miles at LSU against Alabama, you know, for one. I'm just kind of like comparing that. You know, he lost, I believe it was like six or so straight. I don't think Ryan Day can get to six straight losses against Michigan.
No.
But yeah, it's a legitimate question to ponder.
It's not the John Cooper era. He went 2-10-1 before they finally.
Yeah. And even, like, I mean, Harbaugh was 0-5. And they, you know, they gave him a chance for number 6, 7, and 8.
Harbaugh was 0-5, but Harbaugh had a couple things going for him. One, he had been a star player there. He was a well-regarded name and all that, and played there and was a big star quarterback. He had been an NFL quarterback. He had won at Stanford. He had been to the Super Bowl. And he took over a reeling program that they were excited just to get back to being 10-2. Like, when Harbaugh got there, it was like, just only lose to Penn State and Michigan, or Notre Dame and Michigan. And at least we're back.
Right.
He did lose 5 in a row, but 2 of them were excruciatingly close. So there was frustration, but there was enough built in for Harbaugh that he was still appreciated. I think Ryan Day is tolerated and he's not beloved, because he's following Urban Meyer, who set this bar extremely high, and he would always beat Michigan, and obviously they won the national title. It's tricky. His record is extraordinary, but particularly the last 3 years, the Big Ten has been awful.
Yeah.
Awful. There's nobody who can play with these guys. Penn State, kinda. Everyone else is crap. It's a bad league. And it's funny, because, not to minimize the thing, but one of the things that people were like, well, Connor Stallions is there. Look at Michigan's record. Like, well, look at all the other teams in the league. Like, who the hell were you losing to? So, yes, he's won every game against all those teams, which Urban Meyer would not. That he would, you know, he was so, they would blow a game to Purdue. They don't blow games. But I just don't think, I think Ohio State fan knows we got way more talent than even Michigan. Michigan didn't have any Marvin Harrison Juniors out there. How many? Like, they didn't have all those guys you just talked. They don't have all these 5 stars. They have really good players, and they develop them, and they max them out, and they play really smart. But they don't have that. So, but my thing with Ryan Day is he's 44, and he was given the keys to the Lamborghini, but he's still a young coach, and he's still a coach learning. And maybe, you know, look, next year Ohio State should again be loaded. And Ohio and Michigan's probably going to take a step back. So, and you got a playoff coming. Like, I still have a lot of belief in Ryan Day, but I understand the frustration, because you're going to look back on this era and go, wait, we had CJ Stroud and Marvin Harrison Jr. and we didn't do it. Oh man.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, they're continuing to recruit well, but that was an extremely good 2021 class. I'm not sure they will have as much talent next year.
Maybe they won't. Yeah,
I do agree that the expanded playoff should alleviate some of the pressure. Get in the playoff, people are going to say, okay, we're a playoff team, we got a chance there. And I do think with Michigan potentially in disarray next year, you get your leg back up, but we'll see.
Funny, there's obviously many. The trash talking was pretty good after online. I like this one. Touch the Banner, at Touch the Banner, which I'm pretty sure is a big Michigan's Twitter feed. Big Ten coach rankings, current. Number one, Jim Harbaugh. Number two, Sharon Moore. Number three, Kirk Ferentz. Number four, that guy from Northwestern. Number five, Ryan Day. James Franklin, you know, I didn't make that.
Poor James.
But you kind of look at it and you're like, huh, yeah, maybe. Anyway, Michigan will roll on. Could have the, we will preview the most potentially awkward trophy ceremony coming up. Tony Battiti is going to have one of those 13-on-1 coach calls this week, just a game plan to help Ferentz. Is Battiti going to run the group chat? Let's steal the signs.
It's going to be even more awkward than Brett Yormark potentially giving the trophy to Texas, which is also...
Well, we could have some really interesting, right, trophy presentations. You go Brett Pac-12. Yormark to Texas. The George Klavkoff to either team that wins. Both of those teams, Oregon and Washington, were the ones that really sparked the realignment and the collapse going to the Big Ten. And then, Jim Harbaugh in Michigan. And then Florida State. Jim Phillips giving the trophy potentially to a team that has publicly declared that they would like to move out of the league and are disappointed in the conference in its revenue. It's wild. What a wild time in college athletics. And then the fifth one is on the Group of Five level. It's not an awkward trophy presentation, but the Mountain West had to go to some BCS formula to decide a three-way tie. UNLV will host Boise State, I think, in the championship game. San Jose State left out.
They went BCS formula something, and somehow Boise State, which fired its coach like a month ago,
In the championship game. Yeah. Bizarre time in college athletics.
The refereeing will be under question. But we'll see if there's a do it up. I don't think you could get Ferentz. Like, you could try to everyone text Ferentz the game plan, but I don't know. Does he have a cell phone?
He doesn't text. He doesn't.
Does he have a cell phone even?
No.
It's like, call my secretary.
Yeah.
Send me on my landline.
Yeah. Send me a message by a carrier pigeon.
Quickly on Iowa, and 11 touchdowns in 9 Big Ten games. 11 offensive touchdowns
in 9 Big Ten games.
They went 7-2 and won the Big Ten West. All right, Iron Bowl, always crazy. Ross, you were there. It doesn't really matter what the records are. Something crazy is going to happen. I almost feel for Auburn fan here. I do feel for Auburn fan. Like, you had this one. A brief recap, and Ross can fill in the parts. Alabama punts the ball, and as Hugh Freeze says later, it gets muffed. And as Hugh Freeze says later, Auburn coach Hugh Freeze, no one will hurt more than Keontae Scott after that muffed punt, except
whoops,
it wasn't Keontae Scott who was even in the game. It was Coy Moore.
Yeah.
So Hugh Freeze didn't even know who the hell was receiving the punt that got muffed. Then Alabama somehow gets down to first and goal, but then there's a wild snap. I mean, so much happened in the last 40 seconds that you almost don't see in football. They end up 4th and 31. I think everyone's seen this, but 4th and 31, Hugh Freeze calls timeout to set the defense and somehow decides to only rush two players and have a spy on Jalen Milroe.
A spy, 31 yards out from the goal line.
Rushes to Milroe, just stands there. Alabama held too. They only had two, had five blockers on two guys, and they still held. But they're not going to call that. He just stands there and waits. And of course, Nick Saban has a play on this. And eventually, all the guys run to the middle except the two outside receivers, and it sets up one on one in either corner. and Milroe takes a shot. It was a rope.
Unbelievable throw.
And it, yeah, and, unbelievable. And it goes into Isaiah Bonds. Touchdown. Ho-hum. Alabama wins. What'd I miss? Everything.
It was wild. If you look at that replay of that, he threw it about, 50 yards probably in the air from where he was standing. He was standing around, I think, the 35-ish yard line, and it was in the back of the end zone corner. He threw it 45 to 50 yards right on the money, like pinpoint accuracy. And that's why lost in all of this, right, is the – well, there are a couple of things that are lost in all of this. When you have a 4th-and-31 to win the game, a lot of things are lost. Number one is Jalen Milroe's transformation from the guy that we saw the first three or four games to this guy who has that talent that we've seen, but now is making pretty good decisions. And we saw some not good decisions on Saturday, but we saw some things that he did that it was why Alabama's 11-1 right now. But another thing lost is the game plan from Hugh Freeze in a brilliant, like, misdirection rushing type of strategy that's reminiscent, reminded me of, like, the Gus Malzahn, some of the Gus Malzahn games in this Iron Bowl. It was incredible. But everything boiled down to that play, sitting in the press box, it's 4th-and-31. Everybody's writing or already has written their tweet or their part of their story, and Auburn wins, and fans are you can see the student section getting ready to leap over and rush the field. And then boom, right? And the stadium is just completely quieted. It was amazing. Afterward, went down outside the Bama locker room, and Isaiah Bond came out, who caught the pass. And, Nick Saban wouldn't tell us what the name of the play was. Of course, the player, Isaiah Bond, had no issue with telling us the name, which was Grave Digger. And I asked him why you called it Grave Digger, and he, of course, said, because it puts them in the grave. and so it did. Auburn in the grave, and Alabama's still alive for the CFP. Amazing.
And a secret has been revealed, and Isaiah Bond is currently running the stadium steps at Bryant-Denny
Stadium. Well, I think he's earned himself a little bit of latitude after that.
Be nice, Nick. Be nice. All right.
My question, was this the worst game-winning drive in history? It was a mess. It was a disaster until the last play.
It was only one good play.
Yeah. It's like snap the ball when Jalen Milroe isn't ready, lose 10 yards, 15 yards on that. Illegal pass beyond the line of scrimmage. Yeah. I mean,
Milroe was like 5 yards over, like, and then he ran back. Can you do that? Can you run past the line and then back?
We were debating that. We were watching it in the big house press box. I think you might have already left.
We were all
debating that. Like, can you do that? Can you go backwards after? I don't know.
Milroe experience. Yeah.
It was an absolute mess. And then he makes the play and they win the game. And Milroe afterwards screaming, give me the Heisman. Give me that MF-er. Yeah. I don't think we're going to give you the Heisman.
But nice job.
It was a hell of a play. Hell of a play. And I will say, like, between 2021 and this, I think Alabama's paid back in full for the kick six. Like, of all the wild karma that's happened down there in that stadium when these two play, the kick six is never going to be topped. But, boy, this comes close to it. And if you add in the 98-yard drive in 2021 against another, that Auburn team was in disarray. They didn't look any good. All of a sudden, they rise up and play like world beaters just as they did this time. You lose to New Mexico State by 21, and then you have Alabama all but beaten to take them out of the playoff. Wow. Like, just that rivalry is incredible. Michigan-Ohio State is incredible, but Iron Bowl does not take a back seat. If you can have both of them as listed as the top rivalry, then do it, because they both deserve the top step of the podium, because stuff just happens. It's incredible.
Iron Bowl is crazy. Nothing ever really happens in the Michigan-Ohio State game. They just beat the living daylights out of each other. Like, when was the last absolutely crazy game?
Probably 2016, JT Barrett, fourth down.
Yeah, but that was like a close spot. That wasn't the. It wasn't this.
No, it wasn't that.
Yeah,
it wasn't
that. Like,
but there was a lot of stuff.
It's generally confined to the reasonable expectations of what a football game is supposed to look like. Alabama Auburn colors outside the lines,
baby. It does.
They're just drunk.
I was talking to somebody this morning, and he said, you know, Egg Bowl in the Iron Bowl, one of them, at least every year, produces the stupidest game you will ever see. And I think it's right. One of them every year does that, or both. But this year it was the Iron Bowl's turn.
I mean, like, Michigan-Ohio State has decided when Michigan decides to, you know, run the ball out for 7 minutes and grind the clock down, and then Ohio State only has a little bit of time and they got to throw a pick. Like, that's how you end that game, not whatever the hell this is. So it is great. All right, one other game before we get to this playoff chase, because it's a doozy. We've never had this many undefeated teams this late in the season, this many contenders. And we're going into a final weekend where I don't think anybody can afford a loss. No one. We've never had that. Last year, three of the four teams were in already and could lose. One of them, TCU, did and still made it. But the Apple Cup, I have to give a nod to this Apple Cup. The game is tied at, what was it, 17?
20?
What was the final on that?
14? 14?
Whatever it was. Game is tied. 21-21.
That's it, yeah.
1 minute, 15 seconds left. Washington State stops Washington to force a fourth and one with 1:15 left on Washington's own 29-yard line. Their own 29, fourth and one. Kalen DeBoer, who cares? He's going for it. Now, they get stopped. Washington State is in field goal range with 1:15 left. They run it up the middle a couple, gain a couple more yards, kick, and they win the Apple Cup. Washington's undefeated perfect season and playoff chase, they could be out of the playoff. Everything is on the line here. They're not going to lose the game. They're just tying it. Just kick it away. Go overtime. You're the better team. You should win overtime. Kalen DeBoer calls a play where Michael Penix has the option of, like, giving the handoff to a I don't know which back it was, that ran right into the line. He can take it himself, or he can pitch it backwards to Roma Dunze, who is running like a jet
motion.
Jet motion, but behind the quarterback. He throws it to a Dunze. He runs it for 29 yards. This is the gutsiest call I may have ever seen.
It was, like, mind-boggling. I could not believe it. I guess I would be a bad football coach, because there is no way in hell I would have done that. I would have had the punter out there immediately. I would have kicked it away, and we would have played OT. But woo, when it works, it's a thing of beauty. And it worked. It was spectacular. Roma Dunze is such a great player. And I will say, now, Washington continued to lose its mind later on that drive, where they're in field goal range with mere seconds left, and Penix drops back to pass and takes a sack and moves the field goal back like 7 more yards. Like, what are you doing? You don't need to throw it anymore. And then if you are going to throw it, you throw it away. You don't take the sack. Like throwing a cat out the window, landed on its feet somehow, some way. Hell of a win for Washington. What a season.
I was unfortunately not watching this, but we were at the post game right outside the Alabama locker room, and there were a few Alabama folks milling about there that were watching it on their phones, watching the field goal and watching the last drive on their phones. Because, of course, they kind of, right, were rooting for Washington State to pull the upset, because they're thinking if they knock off Georgia, it would improve their chances seeding-wise. But they were watching it, keeping up with things. So it was I'm sad I missed that. I've got to go back and watch this Roma Dunze play. But what an incredible call. By Kalen DeBoer. You know, some of these, like Kalen is, you know, he's a little, I think he's a little different from your normal Power Five coach. You know, he comes from the lower ranks. He spent most of his time kind of in the, I believe the FCS level.
NAIA, like Sioux Falls.
NAIA, yeah. And it, you know, you get these coaches from that level, and it's weird. You think that they would be more pressured at the top level of college football and moving up to the top level, and you think that the pressure is greater, that they might feel it even more, but it's actually the opposite. They kind of don't care. They're like, I'm fortunate to be here. Who gives a blank? Let's go. And a lot of them are offensive coaches, and it's been interesting to watch that, you know.
Oh, they got the money all of a sudden. Like, man, four years ago, I was riding a bus through the Badlands, right?
Right. Right.
1AA playoffs. Like, I got to do this.
NAIA playoffs.
NAIA playoffs. Like, what the hell? What's the worst thing that could happen? And they have to find ways to win. I really think that's kind of part of Ryan Day's problem, is he has 365 to set up this game, and he has no wrinkles, because everything Ohio State does is just, let's just play our guys, and Travion will bust one, because he always busts one. Right. And then he doesn't. Not against Michigan. And so it didn't quite work. Right. Well, Harrison will have a long touch. Well, no, Will Johnson be smart enough to tackle? I think that becomes that part. That's that experience that I think you get to. All right. Let's get this playoff chase. Absolutely bananas. Last weekend of the year. Conference championship weekend is crazy. Could be nothing. Could be everything. But there's going to be a fight probably. Nobody is safe. Nobody is safe. I got 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams with a shot. I'm going to start with it. Georgia. Win and get in. I don't really care what they did against Georgia Tech. I don't really care what anyone does week to week at this point of the year.
Right. You just got to win if you're already
up. You look terrible, then you look great. Okay. Auburn lost to New Mexico State, got blown out, then should have beaten Alabama. So whatever. Win and get in. If they lose, they're 12-1, and they have victories over Missouri, who's number 9 right now, Ole Miss 12, Tennessee is 21. But they would have a loss to Alabama, which presumably would give Alabama the ability to get in front of them. Alabama wins, they're 12-1. Lose and they're out. If they win, they are the unbeaten SEC champion. At 12-1, they'd have victories over Ole Miss, which is number 12, LSU 14, Tennessee 21, and Georgia, which is number 1. However, they lost to Texas. We can imagine a team that won 13 SEC games not getting in. I don't know. Michigan wins and gets in. If they lose, they're 12-1. Their victories over Penn State, it's 11, and Ohio State, it's 2 right now, but would drop. Washington win and get in. Lose, they're 12-1. Their victories are Arizona 15, Oregon 6, Oregon State, which is going to drop down from 16, and maybe Utah gets in the top 25. I don't know. Oregon would need to win. They get to 12-1 and win the Pac-12. They'd have victories over Washington, Oregon State, and maybe Utah, but really they don't have a whole lot, but they look awesome. Florida State is the X factor here. They win. If they lose, I think they're out. If they win, they're 13-0 chance, but they don't look too good. They don't have their starting QB, but they would have victories over LSU at 14, Clemson number 24, and Louisville, which was number 10, and they'd be perfect. Then you have Texas. If they win the Big 12 championship game, they go 12-1. Their victories would be over Alabama at Alabama, who's number 8, Kansas State, which may or may not stay in the Snowmageddon Farmageddon didn't bear well for them. They maybe get knocked out. Oklahoma State. They actually got a disservice by the Stillwater Mullet getting in that game, because Oklahoma State is lower ranked than OU, which should have got in if Oklahoma State got a boxed out Oklahoma. So there's Texas. And then there's still Ohio State, which is 11-1. They don't play. They could back in again. They have victories over Penn State, number 11, and Notre Dame, 18, and their losses to Michigan. So there is a path there for Ohio State. It would take a lot of losses, but anything can happen this week. They need an inside. They need to be dealt in like a straight flush here. But
yeah, but
we've seen this happen for Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
So
never know.
The debate here really comes down to this. Like, well, I don't know. What are your thoughts? You all have thought this. What is your debate on? I guess my thing is going to come down to is Florida State being like this pinnacle moment. If they win, right, do they get in? if they beat Louisville. They survived the swamp. Wasn't impressive, but they won. If they get to 13-0, is there any possible way the committee would leave a 13-0 ACC champion out of the playoff?
I don't think so. No. I mean, this committee has tended to be, you know, and they change the makeup year to year, but it's still, it's year in and year out, tended to be pretty formful, pretty protocol-oriented towards the way things have always been. Traditional rewards for conference champions, for undefeated seasons in the Power Five. And I think if Florida State is 13-0, they're getting in. And they may get in, and then they may get smoked in the first round by either Georgia or Michigan, but I would have a hard time seeing them being left out with that record. And, you know, they scraped around, but they did come back and win against Florida in the swamp in a big rivalry game. If you beat Louisville, Louisville's a good team. They're not a great team. You've got the earlier wins over LSU and over Clemson. I think you've got enough to say, no, you can't put a one-loss team in ahead of us.
No, yeah. We talk about Florida State causing a scene about, you know, leaving the ACC. I mean, if an undefeated ACC champion Florida State is left out of the CFP, especially for like a one-loss team, I mean, Florida State might just say, we're not just leaving the ACC, we're leaving the NCAA, and we're going to play in, you know, the
Canadian
NFL,
Football League,
whatever. Yeah, we're out. We're going to start our own G League for college football. Because, yeah, they've got to be
Central Florida. They could play Central
Florida
for the bowl, won. Like the perfect season. I don't think they would do it. I just don't think they do it. I think that here's the thing. If it comes to this debate and it's Texas or Florida State, who do you think's a better team? I think Texas is a better team, but
too bad. Should have held on against Oklahoma. That's how that works. Florida held on against Clemson, or Florida State held on against Clemson. They held on against Florida. They held on against BC. Played some tight games. They haven't looked great. They won the games. The games have to matter.
It's the same argument of Texas over Alabama. But what if Alabama beats Georgia? What if we have Michigan wins? We have Washington wins.
Yeah. Alabama over Georgia complicates a lot.
Yeah. Then it's hang on to your butts, man.
It's a nightmare scenario there.
Could you leave the SEC out? The SEC champs out?
I think
I mean, I said last week I would have to see it to believe it, and I still stand by that, but it's possible. I mean, it'd be a heck of a discussion to have, you know?
Well, the most likely scenario, just going by like Vegas, right, is Michigan undefeated, Georgia undefeated, Florida State undefeated. So there'll be one in Oregon. Oregon wins,
Washington.
Right? I mean, they're a 9-point favorite. Like Oregon wins, Texas wins. The debate is
Texas and
Florida State. Two maybe three teams for one spot. I mean, Ohio State, I think, is out of that conversation, but it's Oregon or Texas. And if you look at the resumes of those two teams, even though Oregon has been ranked ahead of Texas, if you look at the resumes, the strength of schedule, the wins, it's pretty obvious who has a better resume, right? I think Texas probably has a better resume. Who's been playing better in more dominant football? You know, probably Oregon. It's a fascinating debate, and it would really be very Pac-12 if the Pac-12 was left out on its final year for like a seventh straight year.
But Texas, Oregon, I don't know what's better. Like at that point, I don't know what Oregon State's going to end up ranked now.
Yeah,
like they're probably in the low 20s. Are they in the 20s? Like that's it. So Oregon would have a victory over Washington on a neutral field, but they also lost to Washington. They'd have, I guess, a better loss. Texas would have lost to Oklahoma. But Texas really has is the victory over Alabama, because Kansas State may get dropped out of this thing, and Oklahoma State, like neither one's got a whole lot. Now the SEC, go ahead. We got a lot to circle back on here, so it's a chaos.
We do. But my predisposition would be what we've said basically all year. The Pac-12 had the best non-conference and was probably the best overall league. Reward that champion if you're sitting there at 12-1 and you avenge your only defeat, which was on the road by 3 points in a game to a degree you kind of almost gave away. I would keep Oregon ahead of Texas. But, man, I mean, that's no disrespect to Texas. That's just simply saying give the Pac-12 some respect and give the Pac-12 champion some respect if they do beat Washington.
So the goal, the stated goal is four best teams. Now, my opinion, if I was just going to say right now, the four best teams would be Georgia. I'd like to see Georgia 1, Michigan 2, Washington or Oregon 3, Texas 4. That would be like my choice.
Yep. You leave out Florida State.
I'd leave out Florida State. But they also have 7,000 other rules and procedures, which is so they can then use any of them to be the determinant. The more rules you have, the easier it is to break all the rules. So who knows? But I would be crushed to sit there and say to Florida State, great job, guys. You won all your games, but I just don't – like, I thought Ohio State was going to win yesterday, and I was wrong. So what do I know?
Yeah. Right?
Right? Like, so I think in Florida State, what's not fair is to say, well, they don't have their starting quarterback. Who cares? We don't we talked about this last week. Twice we've had backup quarterbacks win national championships. The whole playoffs 9 years long. You don't know.
Yeah.
And
you can't dock them. Like,
It's like Hoosiers. Yeah. My team is on the field. Mm-hmm. This is Florida State. We're 13-0. Don't worry about who we got. But then you kind of want to do a nice playoff because we'd like to have better, like Georgia versus Florida State with Rodemaker at QB. I'm not too thrilled about Texas versus Georgia. Pretty excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
I hear you.
Like if that's our double dip, it's like Michigan versus Oregon or Washington and then Texas, Georgia, like, whoo, going to be pretty good. But I don't know what you do. And then you get to the SEC. SEC, there are their three big non-conference victories. Mississippi State over Arizona.
Missouri over Kansas State.
I don't even know if that's good anymore. Kentucky over Louisville. Is there another?
Yeah, that's about it.
They went 3-6 against the ACC. So it's like, well, if you look at it in the vacuum that they're supposed to do, the SEC isn't a very strong league. It's not what it was, but we all know how the hell do you have a national championship tournament without the SEC?
Yeah,
which
but
wins it every year. They win it every year. And Alabama, if Alabama wins, they would not have lost to another SEC team. Like they won 13 SEC games. They beat Georgia.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there is a scenario though there, right? Where they get left out. If Florida State undefeated Michigan, undefeated Washington, undefeated in Alabama has beaten Georgia.
Then they argue with Texas.
Who they lost to at home.
Right. By 10
and again,
points.
The games have to matter. And I think in that scenario, the SEC is probably out. And the CFP headquarters in Dallas will be burned to the ground. I'm sorry to say.
Ross in this podcast has set up scenarios where Florida State leaves the NCAA and the CFP headquarters are burned to the ground.
I love good chaos, Pat. Come on. I think in that scenario, games have to matter, and you probably put in Texas as your four seed. I don't know if the committee would have the you know what to do that though.
Right.
To leave out the SEC.
Yeah, that's why, if you're Alabama and if you were Ohio State, you needed some of that chaos to actually land last night. You needed Washington State to beat Washington. You needed Florida to beat Florida State to clear some things out for you.
It's going to be a very, very interesting Saturday. We all know my stance. I don't normally like conference championship weekend. It's delivering this time. I don't know what's going to happen. And the Friday night game should be really fun. Washington, Oregon, and then there'll just be this run of games all the way down to, does Tony Petitti actually hand the trophy over to Jim Harbaugh? Like, this is going to be drama all day long.
Oh, it's going to be fantastic.
And we're getting Alabama, Georgia at 4. I mean, I don't really care what the stakes are. Alabama and Georgia playing football pretty fired up. So They're going to earn their cream corn. They're going to earn their cream corn.
Yeah, Washington and Oregon. I mean, what? I mean, it yeah. is. It's a really good championship weekend, and we'll never see one quite like this again, right? Because yeah, expanded playoff. While it does put the importance on championship games because you get an automatic bye in an automatic spot and all that, but there'll be forever. There'll be for that bye in that spot instead of these championship games, which will be for just getting into the playoff. Because I think if you look like right now, if we were in a 12-team playoff, the loser of the SEC championship game, the loser of the Pac-12 championship game, and maybe even the loser of the ACC championship. You know that, yeah. They're especially if it's probably the undefeated that those lose.
Two. I think Louisville could lose and not get in, but Louisville could play Louisville and Oklahoma State and Iowa could all play their way in. Guaranteed.
Play their way in. Yeah, in teams like Florida State and Texas, if they lost, they'd get in. They'd probably get in.
And that means these schools like Ole Miss, Missouri, Penn State that are sitting at 10-2, they're hoping for chalk because, like, if Iowa upsets Michigan, then Iowa gets in and Michigan, and then Penn State or somebody like that's out.
Mm. Yeah. Can we just say, though, that that's one hypothetical that is like, no, Iowa is not beating Michigan. No, N-O.
Come on, Pat.
Pat, didn't I tell you about the conference call they're going to have?
Yeah. They need
all 13 coaches will be summoned to the Chicago offices to talk about how much we hate Harbaugh.
Yeah. They need more than a conference call and play signals. They need new players and new coaches at Iowa.
They'll slip a couple guys in there.
No.
Is that George Kittle? No, that's not.
It's George Kittle and Sam LaPorta at tight ends.
Tight ends look a little better this week. I don't worry. It's just some kid we found on a farm up there in Calhoun County. They'll walk on. I mean, Ferentz won the game with a kicker who had never kicked. We could have done an hour on that game, the Nebraska game.
Yeah, so much happened Saturday that we didn't even really have a chance to properly disrespect what happened Friday.
The Iowa-Nebraska game is all-timer. I don't know. All right, we'll get to it. All right, we got more chaos. We're like, forget it. This is going long, like I said. So Texas A&M had a new coach for like 2 hours.
That was fun.
Yeah.
I hope Mark Stoops got a gold watch out of that. Now they're both saying they broke up with the other first. This is like a seventh grade romance.
Mm, big surprise.
Do you like me? Check the box. I just asked her if she liked me. I didn't ask, you know. A&M, and so A&M's side of the story is that they heard the fan revolt and pulled the offer. I don't know how that's a brag. Because that just means you're listening to your fans. Stoops is saying he got so overcome with the fun of beating Louisville and being around his guys that he just decided he loved Lexington so much he stayed. Mark Stoops is not going to A&M. I guess what stuns me a little about this whole situation is they had enough time to decide to spend $77 million to fire Jimbo Fisher, but they did not spend the time with a plan on who was coming in for Jimbo Fisher.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, you know what? That they wanted to do, this was the plan, right? They wanted to do a full out, wide casting net, full search, fly around, see everybody, not focus just on one person. Because the thought was A&M has done that in the past, that they've zeroed in on one guy immediately. They wanted to talk to all these people. And what comes with that? Sometimes this.
Hmm. Yeah. This is quite the Aggie cluster here we've got going on. And we'll see if Ross Bjork can survive this. Because if you're getting vetoed by other people, either whether that's fans, whether it's regents, whether they're the same people, I don't know. But, I mean, I've talked to a couple people today who said that Mark Stoops was telling staffers, was telling boosters at Kentucky, hey, it's been great. I've loved it, but I'm leaving. I'm gone. And all of a sudden, he's not gone. And he can say that it was because he just decided he wanted to stay. But that's not the story I'm buying.
Yeah.
So, you know, this has a little bit of a feel of what happened mm-hmm. at Tennessee when they almost hired Greg Schiano, and then the fans revolted, and then eventually the AD gets fired, and you bring in somebody else, and we'll see if Ross Bjork actually gets to make this hire.
And then the AD was interviewing. He was going to get he was going to bring in
they fired him
Mike
before.
Leach.
Yes. Yes. Yep.
And then they fired him.
They called him back to fire him.
And then took Jeremy Pruitt.
Yeah, John Curry.
The fans wanted Pruitt. Yeah, don't listen to the fans.
Yeah. We got a ball coach. We got a good SEC ball coach.
I will say I was not excited about the Mark Stoops hire. I just was like,
okay. No, I mean I was kind of underwhelmed, really. I was like,
how come Dave Dorian isn't on these lists and stuff? What's wrong with Dave Dorian?
I think he is now, this job. I don't know how much, but yeah, his name has been
good
in the mix the last couple years. Yeah. I mean, I remember like he was in the mix last year with Nebraska, I believe. I think this year there was a thought that he was in the group for Mississippi State and Michigan State, both. Yep. You kind of heard his name.
Yep.
So he has been around, and I'll be honest, like I'm a little surprised that somebody hasn't, you know, done that. It's been odd, but you do hear his name, which makes you to believe that, you know, he might be ready.
I don't
to
know.
Move on
I have no. I'm just. State. I mean, he went undefeated at Northern Illinois. He's done a very good job at that mm-hmm. level where it's like some super elite, super expensive school. I think he's got a great job, and he's probably pretty content. But if you're A&M and like what is Mark Stoops that Dave Dorian isn't?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, Mark Stoops has got Kentucky to where they beat all the teams that aren't any good in the SEC, which is saying something.
Yeah.
But
The best thing Mark Stoops has done is he's done well against Florida and he's beaten the hell out of Louisville.
Yeah.
You know, but he hasn't raised him up to contending to win the SEC East.
All right. Well, there's many other jobs opening, but one hire that did happen, Jonathan Smith, Oregon State, is headed to Michigan State. This is their second John Smith. This is not John L. Smith, but we have a new John. He's good. It goes by Jonathan. Thoughts on this hire for the Spartans to end a tumultuous season where they lost, did they lose 48-0 Friday night?
Yeah, it was gruesome. Just they just need to end the season, and they did finally. But
yeah,
I think it's a good hire. I like Jonathan Smith. He's done a great job at a difficult place, Oregon State. You have no advantages at Oregon State, specifically dealing with an in-state team that does have all the advantages, which you go to Michigan State, guess what? A little similar dynamic there. So I think he's a good fit. I think he's a good coach. He's solid all the way around. There's nothing gimmicky about his program. They're well-balanced on offense. They're good on defense. They get players who are good and make them better. So I think he's an excellent fit there. He will need to establish Midwest recruiting ties. Obviously, I bet his staff will have some experience in that area, but I think he has a great chance to do well at Michigan State.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty good fit for what he does in how his programs have been. One thing that is weird is Wright kind of mentioned it there, but he really hasn't coached east of the Rockies, basically, which is interesting. He's been at Boise, he's been at Montana, Idaho, and Washington, and of course Oregon State. And he played at Oregon State, and he's from California. So certainly
Big Ten country now,
you know. That's right. So it'll be interesting to see how that kind of fit there works. But he's done a remarkable job building Oregon State from 2-10 in year one to a team in the last 2 years, right, that really has been in contention late for a conference title. So. He's obviously got plenty of issues at Michigan State. One of the big perks I would think of Michigan State is the end of Big Ten divisions, you know, so that will be helpful, I'm sure.
Playoff is good for Michigan State too. Like the climb over Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State, it has been done, but it is very, very hard. But that you don't have to climb over all of them. Look, that school has got a lot of fans. They've got a lot of potential. They've got a lot of money. the roster's in total disarray right now, but the potential at Michigan State to me has always been significant. And it's not easy, but it's not impossible. And the right guy coming in, I think, could do really well there. It's a great place to play football, a great place to go to school. So I just think there's this isn't a dead-end job in the Big Ten. It's still a upper half job, even with the new additions. But it's been done before where they're successful. And I think it can be again. You know, it's funny, just one quick aside, because this pod's going long anyway. We'll get to the Heisman and all that. But, like, I was laughing on Saturday because Bryce Underwood, the number one recruit in America, class of 2025, top quarterback, number one quarterback from Belleville, Michigan. He tweets out, and I think I saw him there. He's at the Michigan-Ohio State game. He goes to the game. And he was able to go to the game because Michigan State decided to switch their Penn State game from Saturday night in East Lansing to Friday night at Ford Field, because they didn't want to have a small stadium. Like, I don't know. They just didn't want to. They figured they were going to stink, and there'd be 30,000 people freezing in Lansing. So they play indoors at Ford Field. They decide that's a good idea. Then they get the whole Mel Tucker situation. They play this game. They lose 48 to zip. Absolutely humiliated in Detroit. But by doing that, the Michigan State High School final championship games are usually Friday and Saturday in Ford Field. The schedule gets moved to Saturday to Sunday. Bryce Underwood's team is playing now Sunday instead of Saturday, which allows him to take an unofficial visit or whatever, visit, and be on the sideline for their arch rivals, the number one recruit at their arch rivals' biggest game. And I still think the kid will go to LSU, but, like, if you're Michigan, I would want every recruit there yesterday. And it's funny sometimes just how the little things can matter. Like, if they get Bryce Underwood, part of the reason was because Michigan State chickened out of playing in their home stadium.
Yeah.
There are weird things that happen in recruiting, but we'll see. Yeah. Probably still going to come down to NIL. But I would think a recruit sitting there on the sidelines yesterday would have been pretty happy at the possibilities. Anyway. Anything else pressing on the job stuff's going to play out. So I don't know,
You got Mississippi State cooking, probably in the final stages of a hire. Jeff Lebby, Oklahoma's offensive coordinator, is in that. I think things are getting finalized there, but, you know, I think the Stoops situation has caused everybody to think, well, it's not done. Maybe it won't get done. I think this does get done with Lebby, but you never know. Barry Odom was kind of in the mix there, and John Summerall of Troy was in the mix there as well. But I think in the next 24 hours or so, by Monday morning, we should have an answer there. That would be an interesting hire. You know, Lebby has been under Lane Kiffin and, of course, Art Briles, who is his father-in-law. And then Josh Heupel, he was with Josh Heupel at UCF. So young, fairly innovative, creative kind of offensive guy, just what Mississippi State, I think, was kind of looking for in this search. I think they wanted somebody with head coaching experience, but at least right now they've kind of settled this direction. Of course, Lebby was at Oklahoma with Zach Selman, the new state AD, when he was there last year.
Real quick notes, carousel notes. Indiana's paying Tom Allen $20 million to go away. Houston's paying Dana Holgorsen $10 million to go away. But remember, there's not enough money.
Yeah. $117 million total buyout right now. And it was just like we're live, some news rolling in. Tom Allen, for whatever reason, agreed to a settlement with Indiana. I don't know why you would agree to a settlement. So his buyout, which was supposed to be about $20 million, like Pat said, he agreed to a $15.5 million buyout, paid in two $7.5 million installments, basically. But still, the
thoughts
total. So it's
Tom getting passed on.
I did the math. Seven schools owe their head coaches so far a combined buyout of $117 million. again, we're very early in the carousel here, right? $76 million for Jimbo Fisher, $15 million for Allen and Dana Holgorsen, Babers and Arnett, each $4 million, Andy Avalos, $3 million, Danny Gonzalez, $400,000, and actually, which just dropped, Dana DeMille at UTEP, I believe $700,000 for him. So yes, $117 million in buyout.
At what point they start? Record. What point do they start hiring a coach and saying we're only paying you $1 million, but we're paying the team $10 million?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what is Indiana's problem? Right, money for players.
Mm-hmm.
They wasted it all on the coach.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I doubt it. I doubt the coaching salaries are going down, but whatever. All right.
They don't seem to.
No, they don't. All right. Let's hand out our Heisman trophies for the week. Small sample Heisman is what we call it. Anyone got a small sample Heisman?
Oh, yes.
Pat, go ahead.
Oh, yes, I do. Abu Sama III, freshman running back, Iowa State. If you saw Farmageddon, the Iowa State-Kansas State game, it was incredible. That, I mean, dumping snow in Manhattan, Kansas. Huge, biggest snow game of the season so far, I believe. And maybe the craziest box score of any game for the season.
Unreal.
Iowa State won 42-35 and never ran a play in the red zone against Kansas State. All their scores were bombs. They were all long touchdowns. Goodness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
71-yard touchdown, 77-yard touchdown, 79-yard touchdown, 60-yard touchdown, 33-82. And Abu Sama had three of those bombs. He ended up with 276 rushing yards on 16 carries. Averaged 17.25 a carry. Unstoppable. Abu Sama, like I said, freshman, he's from Des Moines. Get him in the snow and let him go, baby. That guy, the greatest snow player on earth.
He's like Adam Vinatieri. Yeah. Couple other stats on this game. Iowa State only had 10 first downs. They only went to they only had 7 third downs. 3 for 7 on third. They only ran 35 plays.
Yeah.
35 offensive plays and scored 42 points.
Wow.
Kansas State had 102 plays.
Wow.
They ran almost three times as many plays. The average gain per play for Iowa State, 13.9. Average rush was 11.2. They time of possession was crazy. It was something like they only had like 12 minutes. They were just so good in the snow. Long distance, baby. They don't care. They don't care up in Ames. Snow? What snow? Farmageddon was Snowmageddon. How do you run 102 offensive plays, the other team runs 35, and you lose?
That's like, wild. Gotta be the first time it's happened. Come on.
I think we were doing some stuff. Has anyone had more points than plays? And there were some, but this is 42-35. That's insane. So
yeah.
Good choice, Pat.
Arkansas, Missouri played on Black Friday. Missouri won 48-14, go 10-2, remarkable. And Eli Drinkwitz, his fourth season there. Cody Schrader, I think we talked about him on the show before, running back, former walk-on, former D Division II running back at Missouri, ran all over the Hogs, ran all over everybody this season in the SEC, really made a dent in the league. He had 217 yards rushing against Arkansas, 27 carries, averaged eight a pop. His rushing performance in the SEC this year has, like I said, been incredible. 148 against Florida, 205 against Tennessee. He had 112 yards against Georgia, 159 in South Carolina. It's been unbelievable. Only two SEC games, I think, did he not have at least 100 yards. Afterward, Eli Drinkwitz, not so boldly, really said, hey, why isn't he getting Heisman consideration? Almost 1,500 yards, 124 yards a game, 13 touchdowns, and he plays for a team that's 10-2. So give it up. Cody Schrader, former walk-on in Division II player, running amok in the SEC.
So I'll give a brief, I'll give two small sample highs. This one, because Michael Benson, president of Coastal Carolina, sent us this one. Sam Pinckney, right? Yeah, Pinckney. Yep. Sam Pinckney, who he calls one of the finest men he's met in higher education, 30 years. School president loves you, Sam. But he now, he set a NCAA record, extended his NCAA record of a catch. He's now caught a ball in 57 consecutive games in the NCAA. 57, and he's the all-time leading receiver in Sun Belt history with 3,568 yards, besting Florida International's T.Y. Hilton. Not bad company to be in, but caught a pass for 57. So there you go for Coastal Carolina. But I am going to give my small sample Heisman to Ollie Gordon II. Ollie Gordon II, running back at Oklahoma State, 34 rushes, 166 yards, 5 touchdowns. As the Cowboys defeat Oklahoma State, Oklahoma State defeats BYU, comes back in a massive fourth quarter comeback and then wins it in double overtime to qualify for the Big 12 championship game. Gordon was incredible, couldn't be stopped in the, he had a touchdown in the third, two in the fourth, and then both scores in overtime. All 5 touchdowns to win that game. It's a great victory by the Cowboys. Not only did they get to the Big 12 championship game, they stop Oklahoma, their hated rival, from getting to the Big 12 championship game. And now they have a shot to defeat Texas and keep them out of the playoff and win the Big 12 championship, their other hated rival. So pretty good stuff for Oklahoma State. They're still, the pokes are still poking, and Ollie Gordon is a big reason for it. All right, we said a lot of mean things on this pod. Can we say something nice? Did the spirit of niceness move anyone?
Well, not really, but I can bend it.
It's the
way.
Holiday season, Pat. Come on, time for giving thanks. We just said Thanksgiving.
I'm going to give thanks to Iowa and Nebraska for playing a game that lived down to everybody's expectations, for being just an offensive debacle that was decided on dueling interceptions at the end by the poor quarterbacks. Just a mess of a game that went down to the wire. And look, it transfixed a lot of people. I know. I was on Twitter, and a lot of people were talking about Iowa 13, Nebraska 10, and the way that thing ended, that thing, with a defensive end dropping into coverage and intercepting Chuba Purdy after Iowa had given the ball away, and it looked like Nebraska was going to have a chance to win and go bowling for the first time in a long time. But no. Chuba Purdy had to drop back and throw one to Iowa, ran it back. They ran a couple plays. They kicked the winning field goal with, as Dan mentioned, kicker who had not kicked all season. So good for the kicker, Marshall Meter, who came off the shelf. And I mean, in a pretty high-pressure situation. He kicked some last year, but he wasn't good. So they benched him, basically. And somebody said, I have not looked this up, but that the only reason Meter was even second string was because the backup kicker for Iowa was suspended in the gambling scandal. So that's the only reason he even got his chance, between that and the other kicker getting 2 kicks blocked earlier in the game. So I would like to thank Nebraska and Iowa for being so painfully on brand.
I want to say something nice about a one Rich Rodriguez at Jacksonville State. The Gamecocks, he's in his second year there, and the Gamecocks are heading to a bowl in their second year in FBS. They're in the transitional period like James Madison, but because there's not enough bowl teams, they will go to a bowl. There's a video, it's great, of Rich Rod announcing that to the team on the plane, and the team erupting and videoing it. Good stuff from Jacksonville State. By the way, Rich Rod, I think he's 18 and 5 there, and 11-2 in conference, I believe, at Jacksonville State. And you wonder, hey, is Rich Rod ever going to get a shot again at the top? And my second say something nice is about his home state, actually, and a job that a lot of people want him to have, which will not open, I don't think, this year, and that's Neil Brown. Came back, the Mountaineers stormed back to beat Baylor, 8-4 during a season in which I don't think a whole lot of people expected much
except maybe Neil Brown to be fired, and instead West Virginia goes 8-4. How about that?
West Virginia's collective is now into hard liquor too. Remember we talked about their beer was going to help raise a lot of five stars, and now they're in on the hooch. So
there we go.
Yeah, look out. There's a lot of potential there. All right, I'm going to say something nice about two things. One, Liberty, perfect season, 12-0. Jamie Chadwell, they beat UTEP in El Paso, and to celebrate, he brought in a mariachi band, play in the locker room.
It's nice. Good.
Not quite. We're playing my theme music, but that didn't turn out. That didn't sustain. Liberty did, 12-0. But I'm really excited and want to say something nice about the AAC championship game. This is a championship game.
Yeah.
Tulane, 8-0 in the AAC. SMU, 8-0 in the ACC. Tulane, a really nice victory over UTSA. On Friday, it was nationally televised, a really good game. Willie Fritz has got that program popping now. A lot of momentum. Of course, they were in the New Year's Six game last year. Beat USC. SMU, blew out Navy to get there. Tulane's 11-1. SMU's 10-2. Potential Group of Five spot in the New Year's Six is on the line. Next year, that's the kind of game that could potentially get somebody in the playoff. And these are good teams, good quality, and I'm glad that we just got best on best here at the AAC. Yeoman Stadium in New Orleans, cool little stadium, cool school, cool city. Going to be a lot of fun for the AAC. So looking forward to that. So that's what I say something nice about. All right, pod has gone long, but there's a lot happening. We will be back on Tuesday for sure, unless something else happens. We're going to need to emergency pod. My guess is we might have more pods this week than normal, but what else you guys doing? What else you guys doing?
Yeah, count on us Tuesday and Thursday, and we'll see if we pop up somewhere
else. See
if
something else pop. We're not waiting for these rank. I don't think the rankings are going to matter. It literally doesn't matter what the rankings are. 1-7 have a real shot, and Ohio State's got a way to get in still.
The only real question I think is Ohio, how far Ohio State drops. Does it drop below Texas, Alabama, behind those two? Yeah. That's kind of really the only real question.
But even then, they'll just make it up on that last one.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, they're all worthless.
Yeah.
Except for the last one.
Their last one's the only one.
Just stupid, silly TV show.
So. Yeah. So we're not going to do too much on that, but we will, we'll further discuss. I don't know. I don't know how, where Ohio State should be. It's tricky. It's tricky. It's a wild one. So good times. Four teamers going out with a bang. And it's pretty exciting. So we will talk to you guys later. Continue to subscribe, share us on social media, and we appreciate it.